so we're here on Daf Yud Gimel Amud Beis, and we've been discussing the sugya of Smichas Zakenim. And the last thing that we discussed was what's called Smichas Chachomim, because we had a brisa that differentiated between smicha and smicha zakenim. So smicha zakenim is a reference to the parhelim dover shel tzibur, and the zakenim that represent the bezna gadol. How many zakenim do we need? That's a machlokas from Shimon Rav Yehuda. According to Rav Shimon, we only need three zakenim. According to Rav Shimon, and according to Rav Yehuda, we need five zakenim. And we had a long discussion about how each shita derives his conclusion. But now we have another entity here that's called smicha. And Rabbi Yochanan says that that smicha in this price is a reference to smichas chachamim, in other words, to call a person a Rebbe, and now he is part of the Mesorah of smicha ish mipi ish. He could serve on a bezdin. When the Torah says Elohim, it refers to dayonim musmachim that have smicha. Those are called mumchim, and we require three chachamim to give smicha to an individual. And that's this brisa. The brisa says smicha usmicha skena b'shlosha, that just like smicha skena, which means the parhelim dover shel tzibur, requires shlosha skenim, so to smicha, which means in Rabbi Yochanan's formulation, mismach sabi, to give someone the status of a musmach, we need three zakenim. And those three zakenim, how are you, will represent the Bezdin HaGadol, and they will give permission to a chacham to determine the law. And we're going to soon see that that has a special relationship with knas, in order to institute a chiyuv knas. I'm just mentioning that, we'll come to it very soon. So the Gemara asks the following question. Omalei Abai L'Rav Yosef. This is where we got up to yesterday, and we're on Daf Yud Gimel Amud Beis here in Masechta Sanhedrin. And we're about, let's say, two-thirds of the way down the page. Mismach Savi B'Shlosha Minon. What's the source in the Torah that to give a Chacham Smicha you need three Zkenim? And the Gemara doesn't come to any conclusion here. Elam, if you're going to say Mirichsiv, because when Moshe Rabbeinu gave Smicha to Yoshua, the pasuk says, "Vayismoches Yadav Alav," which has to be taken literally, by the way, that Moshe Rabbeinu actually put his hands on top of the head of Yoshua. So, Ihachi Tizge Bechad. There's no way you could derive the requirement of three zkenim for smicha from Moshe, because Moshe was only one person. Bechitem, and if you'll say, on the other hand, that Moshe b'makom bimkom shivim v'chad koi. And yesterday we had a long discussion about why and how we know that Moshe Rabbeinu has the status of 71 zkenim. So Yehofi Liboy Shivim V'chad. So we should require 71 to give smicha. So Miman of Shach, we're in trouble. If the source for smicha in the Torah is Moshe Rabbeinu giving smicha to Yoshua, then either you have two choices. Either one Chacham could give smicha, or you need 71 Chachamim to give smicha. But nowhere do we see this concept of representation, which means that three Zkenim from the Sanhedrin can serve to give smicha. Where does number three come from? You know, if you're deriving it from Moshe Rabbeinu, it's either one or 71. You don't have three. Kasha, the Gemara leaves this as a kasha. So what I'd like to do with you is learn with you a few of the footnotes here. Maybe what I should do is photocopy these notes so that you could see them inside. Would that be a good idea?
It's always.
Okay, then. Does anybody?
I'm not a bucky. I'm not a bucky.
All right. So I'll try to just run over and do this. I'm gonna make three copies.
Bad idea. They don't have a large paper.
Yeah, to make this on small paper is complicated. All right, so we'll just have to rely on Torah Shebal Peh. It's not so terrible. I just thought it'd be more gishmak if you had it inside in front of it. Okay, so here's the issue. First, is there a possibility of resolving the Gemara's problem by assuming that Moshe had another two individuals who were with him when he gave smicha to Yoshua? Notes, even though the Torah explicitly mentions Moshe and only Moshe, there's no reference to or inference that there were another two people, but perhaps there were another two people. That's one issue. Now, if you'll ask why did the Torah omit mention of the other two people, so that's going to be based on a Gemara that we'll have very soon on Daf Yudalid, that sometimes lichvodo, in order to give special honor, we omit the names of the other people who are secondary, who are in a lower level. But again, you'll have to wait till we get to Daf Yudalid to appreciate that, and then believe neither when we, in about a half hour or even less, we'll go back to this Gemara and plug this in. So that's futuristic. That's not for us now. In any event, we have another problem, and this is the most important problem that we want to address. The Gemara ends up with Kasha. And I think we've emphasized on many occasions that Kasha is not the same as Tiufta. Tiufta means forget it, you know, we don't know. But Kasha indicates that we don't have a simple answer, but there is an answer. Okay, so I'm going to offer you here, based on the footnotes here in Masifta, three different answers. The greatness of this footnote is that it's an anthology of the Achronim that spans centuries and centuries of literature.
What's the difference between Kasha and Teiku, right?
Teiku is something totally different. Teiku means that we don't really have a resolution to an issue which divides the Chachamim. Kasha or Tiufta means that we have an objection and we don't know how to answer the objection. So Kasha indicates that there is an answer. So what are the answers? So I'm just going to mention three possible resolutions to this Gemara's problem in the name of various Achronim. Again, I can give you the list of the names of the Achronim. Most of them are totally foreign to me in any event, so we'd have to do the research who they are. There's a Sefer called Chamer Dechai. There's another Sefer called Sanhedria Ketana. There's another Sefer called Smichas Chachomim. Again, a whole bunch of Sefer, but that's not the point. I'm more interested in the concepts right now, not so much in the bibliographies. So the first answer that I want to share with you is that the source for three in Smichas Chachamim is Smichas Sekenim, which means Parhelim Dovah Shel Tzibur. Because in Parhelim Dovah Shel Tzibur, the Torah requires a karbon that's brought on behalf of Klal Yisrael. And in order to achieve that goal, and the smicha itself, with the vidui that we discussed yesterday, has to represent all of Klal Yisrael, all we need, let's take Rav Shimon Shita for example, is three representatives, a kind of microcosm, a break-off from the Sanhedrin themselves. The Sanhedrin will decide which three members of the court, of the High Court of Israel, will represent them. And they will achieve a connection between this karbon, this par, and the tzibur. So too, in the case of smichas chachamim, where we want to make this chacham into a rebbe, and he should have the status of a musmach, then what we need is representatives of the high court, and for that one representative is not sufficient, we need three. So I'll just read to you the language inside. Yesh letaretz shamakar lekach, the source for three is smicha lekach smicha b'shlosha, is midin smicha sekenim al par helim davar shel tzibur ledivrei Rabbi Shimon. And to prove this answer, he quotes the Braisa that we're studying. The Braisa says smicha smicha sekenim b'shlosha. So the Braisa itself combines both smicha and smicha sekenim. It means it's one halacha. And again, I'm trying to embellish it in my own language. It's one halacha that the three zkenim of the Bez Nagadol are the representative of the entire Bez Nagadol, which is the entire Klal Yisrael, and they are conferring smicha on this chacham, and now they're accepting him as their Rebbe. Second answer. Yes.
Right. The parham davar. What's the three are paskening that Klal Yisrael,
right.
Rove was.
Right. So that was the shiur that we gave yesterday. I'll just give it to you in a nutshell. Bez Nagadol made a major mistake,
right.
And as a result of that, Rove of Klal Yisrael violated a severe isur.
Right.
Now they have to bring a kapara parhel of davar shel tzibur. Now the smicha is going to initiate a vidui process in which the par
on the animal, on the par,
on the head of the animal, and you have to actually lean on the head of the animal, and that's going to engender in the animal the status of a kapara for Klal Yisro for this horas tos. And the Torah goes out of its way to say v'somchu ziknei ha'eda. Now the word eda refers to the Bez Nagadol. I shouldn't say that because it could be the Sanhedrin Ketan, if you remember, but the Hey Hayidia tells me it's the, and it says Ziknei Ha'eda. Ziknei Ha'eda means those who represent the Eda. And since it says Ziknei in plural, it means two, because Ein Mi'adol Rabin Mi'adol Shnayim, and then we need a third to make it into a Bezdin Noter, and we had a whole discussion why we need a Bezdin Noter. And they represent the Bez Nagadol, who in turn represent Klal Yisrael, to set up this par as a kapara for the horas tos of the Bez Nagadol. Now we're saying that if there's such a concept called representation of the Bez Nagadol, then that also is going to apply to the case of Smichas Chachamim, to give that Chacham the status of a Chacham. We'll see again the Nafkaminas and what power, what license he has, especially in Knossos. And the representation of the Bez Nagadol is the number three, three zkenim. Maybe you could help me, in secular law, is there something parallel that we can relate to where the high court might divide up into different committees, so to speak, and each committee is now authorized in that particular field to represent the entire court? Is there such a thing? I'm sure there is. We need a legal expert here. Do you follow what I mean? You can't always get the entire court together. Again, the Supreme Court of the United States has how many members? Seven?
Nine
members. So that's not terrible to get all nine together. But in some countries, you know, the Supreme Court represents an entire, or even in legislative bodies sometimes, you know, you could have a legislature of 120 members. And you can't expect that at every moment, you know, to make every decision, you could have all 120. So you may have committees that represent. So here we have a sort of a break-off committee that represents the entire Sanhedrin, and that's called V'somchu Ziknei Ha'eda Es Yodam Al Apar. And the Gemara is now, according to this particular approach, equating Smichas Chachamim with Smichas Zkenim Al Rosh Apar, and we have this concept that three Zkenim represent the entire business. Now we get to the second answer. The second answer is as follows. This is the Sanhedrin Akhtana, that's the name of the sefer. He says the following. There's a technical reason, a blockage, why we cannot use Moshe Rabbeinu as the source for how many zkenim we need for smicha. In the case of Moshe Rabbeinu, he he conferred smicha on Yoshua. But how did he confer smicha on Yehoshua? What was exactly done? The pasuk says, the end of Sefer Midbar, Vayismoch es yadav alav. That means that he actually put his hands on the head of Yoshua. Now the Gemara is going to establish in the immediate next paragraph in the Gemara that we don't need for smichas chachamim that the person who's conferring the smicha has to put his hands on the ordained to be's head. In fact, we're going to even see that they don't even have to necessarily be one in the presence of the other. He can make a declaration somewhere within the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael, and he can confer smicha on him even outside of his presence. But in the case of Yoshua, Moshe Rabbeinu in a unique way put his hands on the head of Yoshua. That extra mile, so to speak, has nothing to do with the status of Yoshua receiving smicha. It has to do with Hashras Hashchina, and Amir Tzashem will talk about that later. So that in the case of Moshe conferring smicha on Yoshua, two things are taking place. One is that Moshe is giving smicha to Yoshua, and for that he wouldn't have to have put his hands on Yoshua's head, but there's something else going on over here, which has to do with Hashras Hashchina, may have to do with Nevuah, with leadership, with other dimensions of Yoshua's role, and therefore Moshe Rabbeinu puts his hands on the head of Yoshua. So he says the following, that because Moshe Rabbeinu puts his hands on the head of Yoshua, that's the reason, again this is going to sound very paradoxical, but that's the reason why Moshe Rabbeinu could do this, could achieve this goal alone without the help of two other Zekanim. Why? So for this, we have to study a little bit, just the tip of the iceberg, of the laws of Shlichus. The law of Shlichus, which is called Shlucho Shel Adam Kimoso, applies in one out of two areas. One to the exclusion of the other. There are two areas in Halacha. One area in Halacha is called Dibur. Dibur means when I have to make a pronouncement. Another area of Halacha is called Maisa, where I have to do an action. So, for example, if I want to appoint you as my shliach, that's dibur. I just have to make a pronouncement. On the other hand, if you are going to be my shliach for truma, you have to do an action of hafrashas truma. Shlichus only applies in the area of a maisa, but it doesn't apply in the area of dibur. That's called mili lo mimsiri l'shlichus. So let's say, for example, if Reuven sends a get to his wife and then he wants to be mevatel the get, he has to do that personally. He cannot send the shliach to be mevatel the get. Or for example, if a person takes a neder, he cannot send the shliach to take the neder on his behalf. And there are many, many other examples of this principle called mili lo memsiri l'shlichus, a pronouncement has to be done by the person who's uttering the pronouncement, and it cannot be achieved through a shliach. Where does shlichus operate?
Maisa.
Only if there's a maisa. Oh. If this be the case, then Moshe Rabbeinu conferring smicha on Yehoshua would mean that Moshe Rabbeinu is representing Klal Yisrael, and Klal Yisrael are applauding, are agreeing and consenting that Yoshua become a musmach. And Moshe Rabbeinu can serve as a shliach, and he doesn't need the help of anyone else. Why is Moshe unique? Because Moshe is doing a maisa. The Almaisa Yesh Shlichus. Moshe is doing a Maisa because he is doing a different kind of a smicha. As we said, it's an upgraded smicha that has another dimension to it. And it requires that Moshe put his hands on the head of Yoshua. That action of putting his hands on the head of Yoshua, which is unique to the smicha of Yoshua received by Moshe Rabbeinu, makes Moshe Rabbeinu into a shliach of Klal Yisrael. And now we have all of Klal Yisrael doing the smicha on the head of Moshe of Yoshua. So therefore we have smicha not through Moshe Rabbeinu but through Rabin. However, classic smichas chachamim ain't al yidei maisa, el al yidei dibur greda. As we're going to soon see, the Gemara doesn't require that the masmich puts his hands on the head of the musmach. That's what he says, kibavur b'emshech ha-Gemara. Is therefore ein moel b'zeh shlichus, because mili lo memsuril shlichus, to make the declaration that you are a Rebbe and you are a musmach, that's a declaration that does not lend itself to shlichus. It's not included in shlichus because it becomes mili v'mili lo memsuri l'shlichus. It's only a verbal enunciation, a declaration. And therefore, you're going to need three zekenim. Now again, in a funny sort of sense, the second answer dodges the question. It doesn't really answer the question head on, because it's not telling you why the number three is going to be the secret number. So we're going to have to find some independent answer to the question, why the number three? But it does form an answer to the question, how can we derive smicha from Moshe Rabbeinu? And paradoxically, Moshe Rabbeinu does a lone job, and he doesn't require the help of any others, and yet we're going to say that you need three chachamim to confer smicha, and no less than three. So again, we're only addressing part of the Gemara's answer. The Gemara objects to Moshe Rabbeinu because b'manafsham, either you require one or you require 71. But the answer is no, we're only going to require one. But Moshe Rabbeinu has a unique status because of the fact that he's doing a Maisa Smicha, he can serve as a Shliach of the Rabbim. But if not for that special Maisa Smicha, in the classical case of Mili of a declaration of Smicha, then Enoch Hinami, Moshe would have needed the help of two other people.
Three helps by a Dibur. By Shlichus?
No.
Can a base team be Mivatel again?
Not that I know of. Without the Askom of the Baal.
So how does three help either?
Oh, you mean why does Bittel HaGet require the presence of Shlosha? You're asking?
No, you're saying that one can't work when you don't do physical smicha because it's only a dibor.
Right, and there's no shlichus, so you need the three zkenim themselves. Masha ain kain in the case of Moshe, since he's doing a maisa, he doesn't need the help of two other zkenim because he's the shliach of the rabbin.
When you have three in a classical smicha, what are they doing? Is it a shlichus that they're doing?
No, I don't think so. They're taking their status and they're bestowing their status on someone else.
Nothing to do with shlichus.
Nothing to do with shlichus. Correct. Moshe Rabbeinu becomes the shlich of the rabbim of Klal Yisrael because of the maisa that he's doing. So when the Gemara objects and says, "Well, how can you derive smicha of chachamim from Moshe Rabbeinu?" If so, you should conclude that only one is sufficient. No, that's unique to Moshe Rabbeinu. There one was sufficient, but in general, you need three. Again, we're not answering the question why you need three. That's what I'm pointing out here. That this middle answer is missing. Again, it could be if I had the access to the Sanhedrin Ketana, maybe there would be an answer to that question. I'm just giving you a summary of what I have here. Now we're up to the third answer. And he says the following, that the source for three in Smichas Chachomim is a Kal Vachomim. Why? Because what is the authority of a Musmach? His primary authority is Dinei Knossos. As we're soon going to see in the Sugya, in order to enact a decision of paying a knas, or shall I say not enact, maybe a better word would be in order to pronounce and engender a chiyuv knas, that ruling has to come from a musmach. Now, how many people will sit on the court in order to impose a knas. Like, let's say, for example, what example could I give? Ones. Ones from a fata, they pay 50 kesef. So you need three, because the Torah says Elohim three times, and Elohim requires musmachim. So we need musmachim times three. So the Kal V'Chomer is the following. If the whole purpose or status or authority of the musmach is that he's now upgraded to the ability to create a chiyuv knas, and for that you need three, then Kal V'Chomer, to give him the status of someone who could sit on a bezdin and establish a knas, you would certainly need three.
I don't know if I'm mistaken, but if I read that even though you have three, only one of them has to be Kasmicha.
Oh, okay. So you're one step ahead of me, because that's going to be the Rambam's sheet.
That would just blow it all away. That whole sphora away.
So not exactly. Let me read to you the Rambam. The Rambam says as follows: Afal pishe tzarech shlosha l'smicha. Mikol makom ein tzarech shiyu shloshtam smuchim. So we need a tribunal of three in order to confer smicha, but we don't need that all three be smuchim. Eladai shei echad mehem samuch. So we have one samuch and two other chachamim who are not musmachim. So the Kesef Mishnah says, what's going on over here? If you're requiring three, then they should all be musmachim. They should all be smuchim. So the Kesef Mishnah comes up with a very, again, there's a technical answer here which is very strange in my mind, but I'm sure that there's much deeper meaning here, deeper lumdus. But he says the following. Kosav a Kesef Mishnah b'bir divrei Rambam. Shemayachar ha-gemara nishara b'kusha. The gemara blibes with the kasha. Poshet ha-dovor she'ein tzarech shivim v'yechad. It was simple to the gemara. That was beyond the shadow of a doubt. That you don't need 71 judges for smicha. On the other hand, we have a brisa, and the brisa says that smicha usmichas kele b'shlosha, which means that we certainly reject the possibility that you need 71 judges for smichas chachamim. But on the other hand, the Gemara says, "Kash, I don't understand the brisa, because the brisa says you require three, and yet there's no source for three. Moshe Rabbeinu is only one." So the Rambam says, "Leish yesh li yashiv ha'inyan kach." How do we reconcile the fact that on the one hand the brisa says that you need three, and on the other hand the Gemara says kasha because Moshe Rabbeinu is only one? So the Rambam's solution to this problem is shed miikar din smicha, as far as who's conferring the smicha, dai bi echad. Something got cut off here on the photocopy. Dai bi echad samuch. So you only need one person who's a samuch, like in the case of Moshe Rabbeinu. But the Braisa says you need three. And the Gemara blinds with the cash, because if the source for smicha is Moshe Rabbeinu, why should you require three? So the Rambam says, in order to satisfy the requirement of the Braisa, yesh letzaref elav od shnayim afal pishayinam musmachim. So this is, again, the technicalities here are very, mechanical. They're very difficult to relate to. That's why I think there's a tzvei dinim here. I'm sure there's a lumdus here that I'm not yet familiar with. Hopefully by my next Ian Shir, which I give usually at 10:30, I'll have an answer to this question. But there are two dinim over here. One din is that we derive from Moshe Rabbeinu that all you need is one samuch to confer smicha, because in the case of Yeshua, Moshe was operating as a single samuch. But the Braisa says it requires three. And the Rambam says that the Gemara never justifies the Braisa. And if the Gemara never justifies the Braisa, we have to accept the Braisa. But on the other hand, we have to accept that the source for this halach is Moshe Rabbeinu, which means you only require one. So the Rambam's compromise shita, he reconciles this by saying that you need one samach to give smicha, but then you need another two judges to be on the bench, so to speak, to be part of this tribunal, even though they're not musmach. Okay, I have a lot more to say about this, but I'd rather read the next few lines in the Gemara. Amalei Rav Acha Berei de Ravel Rav Ashi Biyada Mamish Samchinen Lei. Do we require that the tribunal will say of smuchim that are giving smicha have to actually put their hands on the head of the nismach? Amalei, so Rav Ashi responds, no, they don't have to put their hands on the musmach. Ela samchin lei bishma. What does that mean, samchin lei bishma? It means instead of putting their hands on the head of the samuch, of the nismach, what they'll do is they'll recite shma. Shma means a name. What is that name? Karile Rebbe. They'll call him Rebbe. We now confer on you the title of Rebbe. Now, what is the significance of ordaining this person as a Rebbe, this Nismach as a Rebbe? The Yavile Rishuso Lemedin Dine Knossos. Now he's upgraded to a special status in which he can sit on a bezdin of smuchim that are going to enact or establish a chiyuv knas. Okay, now I'm going to give you a little bit of a summary of a sugya that we had earlier in Masechta Sanhedrin. The Gemara quotes the pasuk in Mishpatim. It says, "V'nikrav balabais el Elohim." The word Elohim implies smuchim. And the pasuk itself is not limited to knas. The pasuk itself is addressing other cases like gzelos and chavolos and so forth, where there's compensation for a loss of money. It's not knas. So me'ikar adin, the Gemara says that we should require in dini momino, straight across the board, smuchim. But the Gemara back on Daf Beis Amid Beis says that we have a problem of Kadesh Lo Tinol Delis Bifnei Lov, and nobody's going to want to lend money because they know that they'll only be able to, the only recourse they have to get their money back if they have to go to a court would be to gather together smuchim, and that's very rare. So we made a takana that in Dini Momentus in general, you don't need smuchim, but three dayonim are enough. However, that's general dini momenus, like zelos and dini shmira, however, or halvos. However, with regard to knossos, which is in the Gemara's language above a comment, that's called a milsilo shchicha, it's somewhat rare, they left the din da'oraisa in its place, and they required smuchim. So, for example, you remember we had a Gemara that said, ain't done in dine knossos bebavel, because in Babel they didn't have smuchim. So they couldn't judge knossos. So that halacha really should apply, according to the Doraisa Mikra Din, to all dini mamonos, but shalotinu delos they love, and they made a takana that a bezdin, even she'enom shel smuchim, can judge in dini mamonos in general. But as far as knossos is concerned, we leave the halacha as it is, and we require smuchim. So when we confer smicha, we call a person a Rebbe, what we're saying is that now you have the license to determine a knas. We could have gone a step further and said, now you have license to sit on a beis din in monetary cases, but because of the takana of shalotil al des, if they know if they love it, we accept a beis din even if it's not smuchim. Therefore, the significance of smicha is irrelevant to dini mamonos in general. It's only relevant to what?
Knas.
To knas, the knosos. Okay, that's point number one. Next, what is the Gemara vacillating about when Rav Acha approaches Rav Ashi with the question of whether or not Smichas Chacham requires that he puts his hands on his head. And the answer is that if we derive Smichas Chachamim from Moshe and Yoshua, then for sure we have to duplicate what Moshe did in the case of Yoshua. We should require Yod of Mamash, that he has to take his hands and put them on his head. That's what Moshe did to Yoshua. But since we already clarified that we cannot derive it from Moshe Rabbeinu, and Moshe Rabbeinu went a step beyond Smicha, and as we said earlier, he played a special role as one person conferring Smicha to Yoshua. That special role was achieved by Moshe Rabbeinu when he placed his hands on the head of Yoshua. But as far as classic Smicha is concerned, we're not going to be tied down to the requirements, the conditions of Moshe Rabbeinu, and require that he put his hands on top of the Nisbach's head, because that we're not going to derive from Moshe Rabbeinu. And therefore, the Gemara thinks that all you need is a declaration. Now here I want to share with you an insight of the Yavetz. The Yavetz lived 5 centuries ago. His name was Rav Yaakov Emden. He authored a book called Lechem Shamayim. So he writes the following. Why is the Gemara insistent that you don't require putting the hands of the Masmich or the Masmichim onto the head of the Nisbach? I mean, what would be so terrible? So he says the following. He says that what the Gemara's goal is, the agenda here, so to speak, is that we want to allow the Somech to give Smicha to the Nisbach, even if the Nisbach is not present. He's on the other side of the world. Shim Lokein, if you're going to require Smicha of Yadav Mamish, Yesh Lachush Lebitol Asmicha. At the end of the day, you're going to undermine the entire enterprise of Smicha. She Pa'am and Rabos is quite common. She Eina Nisbach Yochol Lovel Lifnei Asomech. He's so far away on the other side. Again, they didn't have the means of transportation that we have. Again, then the modern response to literature about Skype. So how are you going to get Smicha if he's on the other end of the earth and he can't get there? So you're going to undermine the whole enterprise of Smicha. You're going to break down the chain of Smicha. You know, the Rambam writes in his Akdoma to the Yad HaChazaka, the Mishneh Torah, that there were 40 generations of Smicha. And the Rambam writes that im asomech v'nismach shneim hem b'eretz Yisrael nitan lismoch, says the Rambam, af k'she'ein ha'nismach motzui eitzel asomech. In other words, basically all he has to do is send a message to the nismach that I granted you smicha and I called you a Rebbe. So they used to put the documents into a tie it down to a bird and send the bird out. They'll put it into a bottle. And, whatever they do, they send a shliach, like in the Megillas Esther, and the shliach will notify the nisbach that he already received smicha. My father's had the opposite problem because he never got the message from the yeshiva that he got smicha. He was already serving as a rabbi in Bangor, Maine. This is 100 years ago. And he didn't get smicha, so he kept calling the office of the yeshiva, send me my smicha. So they told him that with all due respect, they used to call by his Yiddish name Berleib, they said, Berleib, you never finished your Nida Mikvas exam. So they had two different rabbinic committees. One rabbinic committee would test you on all of your knowledge in general, especially on Issa V'Heter. And then they had a special committee that was headed up by Telzer Rosh Hashiva, who came to Yeshiva University. His name was Rav Aronovich, and he was the expert Nida Mikvos. So, did I ever tell you this story? What my father called up Rav Aronovich, he said, Rebbe, I can't get my smicha because you didn't approve my knowledge in Nida Mikvos. So Rav Aronovich said, so come and be tested. So my father made a trip again in those days. It sounds like a joke, but in those days to get from Bangor, Maine to New York was a whole schlep with a train and everything else. The trains were very slow. And it was Chol HaMoed Sukkos. And he comes into Rav Aronovich. Rav Aronovich is firing question after question in Nida Mikvos for like an hour. And my father was doing very well, but at one point, you know, my father turns to Rabbi Norvitz. He says, "Rebbe Heint is yontuf, and we have drinking at this. We have to drink." So he pours a l'chaim. So then they go back to the questions. For another hour, he drills them in the mikvahs. So my father says, medaf tasid. So they have another schnapps, and they start dancing. And then my father notices Rabbi Aronovich is turning red. So he puts him down on his couch, and he lays him down, he covers him with a blanket, and he goes back to bang your man. He wastes another 2 months, he still didn't get his sleep. Oh, no. So he calls up, and they said, "Well, we're waiting for Rabbi Aronovich." So he calls up Rabbi Aronovich. So Rabbi Aronovich says, "I remember that we danced, I remember that we drank, but I don't remember your answers to the questions." So my father spent an hour on the phone, long distance from Bangabay, reviewing all the questions and all the answers that he gave to the questions. "Oh, Rabbi Aronovich, now I remember," he says. And a week later, he got his sleep in the mail. So the Gemara says that you can give long distance smicha. You don't have to have the nisbach in front of you to, you know, to this. And we'll send you a document in the mail. And that's the final conclusion of the Gemara. And according to the Ayvitz, that guarantees the hemshech of smicha. Now the Gemara asks the following question: V'chadlo samich. We've just concluded, based on the Braisa, that just like Smichas Zakenim in Parhelim Dub requires 3 Zakenim, so too Smichas Chacham requires 3 Zakenim. Is that really true? Va'amar Rav Yehuda Marav. Baram, however, okay, we have to see what the word however is doing here. Zachar Oso Ha'ish L'Tov Rav Yehuda Ben Bava Shmo She'el Molei Hu Nishtakhu Dinei Knossos Mi'Yisrael. It means that Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, he was one of the Asara Haruge Malchus, who was put to death cruelly by the Romans. If not for the fact that he saved Smicha, then the entire enterprise of Knossos would have been completely wiped off Jewish history. Because he lived at a time when the Romans decreed that you were not allowed to give smicha, and he violated that ruling, that gzera of the Malchus HaRashad of the Romans, and he gave smicha to 5 chachamim, and those chachamim were able to continue smicha for the next who knows how many hundreds of years. So the Gemara says, Nishtakhu Nigrasinu. What do you mean? What do you mean that they would have forgotten the laws of Knossos? Let's study the laws of Knossos. Elah says the Gemara, and here we have to turn to Daf Yudalid Omen Aleph. Batlu Dine Knossos Mi'Yisrael. Just change the text a little bit, and what it means is that the adjudication of Dine Knossos would have been a matter of the long distance past. It would have completely expired in the history of Klal Yisrael, because only a sum of king can determine and establish a chiyuv knas, and smicha would have been totally lost. Shepam achas gozra malchus harasha. We're talking about Rome. Gzeral Yisrael shekola somech yehoreg. Now it's very interesting. You know, my Rebbe used to always say that if you want to know what keeps Klal Yisrael going, the answer you can find from the anti-Semites. Somehow our enemies know exactly, they intuit, where to put the finger on the continuation of Klal Yisrael. Today it's the state of Israel, I'm afraid. And that's where our enemies are rising up against us. But at that time, it was smicha. Why smicha? And the answer is that other gzeros that the Romans instituted would be here and gone. Meaning, at one point in history, you know, the Romans could say that you can't make Kiddush Aliyayim, or whatever gzero they want to come up with, and they could outlaw, you know, religious persecution. But all those gzeros will eventually fall apart, and the Jews will return to their customs and their traditions. But in the case of whatchamacallit, of smicha, once in a single generation, they completely obliterate smicha, there's no way that you can go back to smicha, because you need an unbroken chain. And again, how the Romans had the insight to know exactly how to undermine Klal Yisrael, that's the unique intuition of our enemies. But in any event, V'cha'anismach yehoreg. Now watch this. Not only is the chacham asomech put to death, but even the nismach will be put to death. Not only that, that's halbitzor. Ve'ir shesomchim b'techorev. When we catch the chacham who gives smicha in a city, the entire city will be completely destroyed. Not only that, but utchumin shesomchim b'hem ye'akru. Let's say that the smicha would be conferred outside of the city limits. Well, from the point of smicha, we'll put an X on the map. From that location, we're going to draw a radius of 2,000 amah, which is called the tchum, and any Jew who lives within that 2,000 amah radius will be completely destroyed. So now Yehuda ben Bava is in a bind because he's the last musmach. Ma asa Rav Yehuda ben Bava halach v'yashav lo ben shnei harim gedolim. He was trying to hide between two great mountains. And I think he was thinking that they wouldn't catch him, and even if they would catch him, they wouldn't be able to raise the ground because of the two mountains that surround him. Ubein shtei ayoros gedolos, and he was outside the city limits of two great cities. Ubein shnei tchumei shabbos, so that even if the Romans would discover him, they wouldn't be able to destroy a nearby city because there was no city within a 2,000 amah radius.
He put himself in a suffix position.
In a what?
Suffix
misa, you mean?
For them, for the
Well, I'm not sure what you mean by suffering.
Well, he's not affiliated with anything.
Suffering, I thought you were asking my question, how can he put his life into danger?
No,
that's not what you're asking.
No, he's not affiliated with any city, he's not affiliated with any tafung, he's not affiliated with any community, so he's just really on his own.
And he's putting his own life on the line, but he's doing it in a way that he does damage control, the least amount of destruction. If the Romans catch him, they won't be able to destroy any other Jews because he's not within a tchum of any city, of any great city. Now, the Brisa actually identifies where he found these two great mountains that were located at a distance from two great cities. It was between the cities of Usha and Shfar'am. Now, I think in modern Israel they have a city called Shfar'am. I have no idea if it's the same location. I don't know about Usha. I've never seen a place called Usha. The Sanhedrin actually eventually will go to Usha. The Samach Sham Chamisha's Canaan. Now, again, keep in mind that at the face of it, he seems to be endangering not only his own life, but the lives of five Zkenim, because Kol HaNismach Yehoreg. So even if he somehow, you know, obviated or protected the cities around him and so forth, but what about the five Zkenim? That we'll get to that a little bit later. The Eluhain, Rabbi Meir, now this is a big problem, because Rabbi Meir actually got smicha from Rabbi Akiva. So we don't know exactly what Rabbi Meir is doing here on this list of Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava. For Rabbi Yehuda, for Rabbi Shimon, for Rabbi Yossi, for Rabbi Elazar ben Shammua. All these five, according to one version, there were five Zkenim that received smicha at that moment from Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava. Rabbi Avya, one of the Amoraim, he had a different tradition that there were six Chachamim who received smicha from Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, af Rabbi Nechemya. So I don't know, gentlemen, I don't think you were here when we were learning Muktza. That was one of our Limudim here. And Rabbi Nechemya is one of the major Tanoim in the laws of Muktza. Anyway, but he came and shekiru oivehem bohem. Now, I'm not sure exactly how the word got out, but the battalions of the Romans found out about this smicha, and they're trying to capture those who are guilty, who violated the Roman decree, and put them to death. So at this point, Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava and his Talmidim realize that their fate is sealed. Amar lahem, so Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava turns to the Talmidim. They were much younger than he was. Banai, my sons, rutsu. Rutsu means get cover, you know, hide, run away. Amar lo, so they respond, but Rebbe, mate alecha, you're an old man, you can't run away, you don't have the ability. Amar lo, hen hareni muta lifneihem, I am placing myself in the, so to speak, at the hands or at the mercy of the Roman legions, ke'evin she'ein la hofchim, like a stone that has no way of protecting itself. In other words, I can't turn my back against the Roman legions and flee from them, but you at least find yourself refuge. Amru. Now again, I'm not sure who is recording this event. Maybe the Chachamim somehow were hidden in mountains and caves and they were able to see what went on, I don't know. But lo zazu misham, the enemies of the Jewish people, the Roman legions, didn't budge from the spot ad shenatzu bo, until they pierced his body. This is Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, shloshmeos, with 300 lunvios. Lunvios. He translates lunvios as chanitos. There's some sort of spears. Shel barzel, made out of a metal. V'asua kikivra, they made him like a sieve. His body was so full of holes. Now it's interesting, the historians claim, based on this brisa, that when we read on Tisha B'Av and also on Yom Kippur, the Asar Ruge Malchus, you get the impression from the transmission that all 10 of the martyrs died together, you know, at one time. That's not true. They died at different moments. The Paitan, for dramatic reasons and for the purpose of achieving the goal of those piyutim, again, Tisha B'Av has one goal, which is called Avelus, and Yom Kippur has a different goal, which is called Kapara. They found it necessary to combine all the stories of the 10 martyrs, but Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, for example, was killed alone. It's interesting because Melech Yoshio was also killed in a very similar way. In any event, we see that Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava was alone giving smicha, so it seems like you don't need three zkenim to give smicha to Chacham. So the Gemara answers, and this is what I indicated to you before, that Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava chriti havi badei, there were the two other Chacham that were with him, hopefully they were young people that they could flee. V'hai de lo chashiv lu, and the Braisa doesn't mention these other Chachamim, mishum kvodo de Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava. Now, Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava was the gadol, he was the one, the great giant who conferred the smicha. He had to have another two Chachamim with him, but to mention them by name would have been, in a sense, to detract from the glory and the majesty of Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava. So that's what I mentioned to you before, that there was one possible answer to Gemara's Kasha as to how Moshe Rabbeinu could have conferred smicha on Yoshua as a lone ranger without two other Chachamim, that maybe there in fact were two other Chachamim, but their names were omitted by the Torah in order to give more cover, in order to give more respect to Moshe Rabbeinu.
Rabbi Berzon, those two others need smicha or not?
According to the Rambam, for sure they don't need smicha. I don't know if there are any other Rishonim, but that's... So in the footnote here, he says that in the case of Moshe Rabbeinu, we cannot give this answer that there were actually two other people. The Gemara obliges with the Kasha. And we're not going to say that their names were left out because of Kvodo Shel Moshe, like the Gemara says with regard to Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava. He says, Me'achar shelo gila akosuv b'shum makom shesmichi b'shlosha. Since there's no other source in the Torah to require three for smichas chachamim, lo haya l'Torah l'halim es shnayim achirim. The Torah wouldn't have omitted the existence of the other two simply because of Kvodo Shel Moshe. Because the Torah would have gone out of its way, despite the Kavod Shel Moshe, in order to teach us the law of smicha b'shlosha. So that's not a valid answer in the case of Moshe, and if the Gemara insists that Moshe conferred smicha, he alone conferred smicha on Yoshua, there were no other two two chachamim that joined him. And again, we said that Moshe Rabbeinu, because of the nature of his smicha, was able to achieve that goal. Okay. Now I want to share with you a Rambam. I'll try to make this short and sweet, but this is one of the most important and one of the most famous Rambams in the entire Mishnah Torah. You've got to trust me on that. I'm not just dramatizing. The Rambam says the following. Right? So the Gemara believes that you need three zakenim in order to confer smicha. You don't have to have the nismach present. You don't need mamish smichas yodayim, but you need, and the Rambam Shita was at least one of those zakenim is a son of himself, the other two not. Says the Rambam, if yaskimu kol chachbe eretz Yisrael limnos dayonim velismach osam, toil smichasam. There's another way of conferring smicha, says the Rambam. And that is if you get a consent of all the chachamim in Eretz Yisrael. None of them are musmachim, but they can create smicha. He says the following, the afal gav di ena chachamim hasomchim smuchim bi'atzmam. So you have the chachamim of Eretz Yisrael, and they all agree and consent to give smicha, and they themselves are not musmachim. Yecholim anismachim ladun dini knasos velismach alacherim. There's a full-fledged status as a samuch based on a smicha that was created by Chachmei Eretz Yisrael. And the Rambam proves it. Now, the Rambam that I quoted to you first is the Rambam in the Mishnah Torah. The Rambam I'm quoting to you now is in his Pirush HaMishnayos at the beginning of Masechta Sanhedrin. He says the following. The Pasuk says in Yeshayahu HaNavi, V'ashiva shoftayich k'varishona, that at the time of the ultimate redemption, there will be smuchim. Shoftayich k'varishona. K'varishona means like the original smuchim. So the Rambam asks the following question. How could the Navi promise us and guarantee that there will be smuchim? Hari ein lanu ayom dayonim smuchim. The efshalom shamashiach yismoch meachashu eino mosif eino goreh b'toras klum. In other words, with all the respect to the Mashiach, but he doesn't have a status of a samuch. So now the Rambam asks the following question. We're going back to the Rambam in Mishnah Torah. The Gemara says that Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava was so mechamisha zkenim, and if not for that, there would never be dine knossos. Why? Why does the Gemara assume there would never be dine knossos? Yisbatlu dine knossos. Madua. Hare afim tisbatel asmicha ish mipiyish yikolim lukulam litasei felismok yachad. Do you hear the Rambam's cash on himself? The Rambam is very intellectually honest. He says, how can I tell you that there's another method of conferring smicha when the Gemara says that if not for Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava conferring smicha on the fire, then Dini Knas would have ended? Why not just gather together the people, all the Chachamim, and make it a universal, unanimous decision that will confer smicha on so and so? Says the Rambam, Hainu. At that point, the Jewish nation was spread throughout the world. There was an impossibility to gather together all the Jews, and I would add the following, and get a unanimous decision. And then, there's a comment here from the Masifta, the name of the Achronim, and he says the following. V'achen b'tkufat ha-Beit Yosef, we all know this piece of history. This is 5 centuries ago in Tzfat. Nis'oru chachmei Tzfat lasod k'divrei ha-Rambam, to gather together, and unanimously they decided to confer smichon ma'ri be'rav. You can go to the synagogue today in Tzfat. V'hu samach la'chirim. If I'm not mistaken, again you'll laugh because the number seems to repeat itself, but I think that the Ma'ari Bei Rav gave smicha to five Sgenim, if I'm not mistaken. The Alshich and I think to Reb Chaim Ben Attar, and the Beis Yosef got smicha. Ach nisora bazem achlokes gedola mitzad Rabbani Yerushalayim uberosham Rabbi Levi ben Chaviv, and he opposed that this smicha is memela. This smicha never really took, it got off the ground, because the Rambam's language is haskamas kol chachmei Eretz Yisrael. Now chachmei Eretz Yisrael includes not just Tzfat but Yerushalayim as well, and the chachmei Yerushalayim put up a stink and they objected, and as a result the whole enterprise of smicha fell upon.
But like the first 71, when they composed the Sanhedrin, they have to
correct. If eventually they would confer smicha on 70 chachamim, and then there would be a nasi, like in this case, maybe the nasi would have been the Marib and Chaviv, then what you would have is the Sanhedrin be Yisrael. I mean, what that would mean, again, you know, I don't want to get into politics, because today, if you enunciate the words that we can have a modern democratic state based on halacha, then they lynch you, mamish lynch you in this crazy country. But, you know, the freedom of speech goes only so far. But the truth is that if this enterprise, the smicha, would ever get off the ground, and again, from time to time over the course of Jewish history, you'll hear a couple of voices, you know, faint voices in the outskirts that say, why aren't we mechadish smicha?
Rambam's raya is that it must have such a mechanism for in the future when need a smoking. How was the first smicha done?
But I think Moshe Rabbeinu got smicha straight from HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
So that could happen in Lasid Lavo too.
That could be an answer to the Rabbim. In other words, the same way that Moshe Rabbeinu got smicha from the Ribbono Shel Olam, maybe the Mashiach could get smicha, or somebody of that status. In other words, the Rabbim understood Vashiva Shoftaich Varishona means the chain of smicha from Moshe and Rabbeinu on. Now, the Chachmei Kabbalah claim that Moshe Rabbeinu himself is going to be the Mashiach. Now, what that means, I don't know. It doesn't mean Moshe Rabbeinu as a physical entity, but some sort of reflection of Moshe Rabbeinu. So maybe we can assume from the Bali Kabbalah's perspective that if Moshe Rabbeinu is the Mashiach...
Oh, how can he be on this?
Well, again, he's not from Malchus Beis David,
but
he does come from Shevet Levi, and that gives him the status of a quasi-Mashiach. In other words, Mashiach has two different roles, and the question is if it'll be one person or it'll be two people. And Mashiach, on the one hand, is meant to fight the battles and destroy our enemies. He's a military champion. On the other hand, Mashiach is meant to be a religious leader, a spiritual leader, and he's going to bring back all the deeper understandings of the mitzvahs. Question is that, you know, again, you have to know Kabbalah for this. That's not my...
They're supposed to both come in tandem. Mashiach and then Moshe Rabbeinu, and then confer with each other, and then
right. Maybe there'll be one Mashiach, there'll be Moshe, there'll be another Mashiach. It's going to be a tribunal of sorts. But I wanted to end the shiur with this Rama, because this really is a fascinating Rambam and a fascinating piece of history.
What was the objection of the Chachmei?
I'm not sure, but I think what happened was, the entire movement at Tzfat was a bone of contention. It was, in a sense, an insult to Yerushalayim. Now, why did the Chachamim gravitate to Tzfat? It was sort of like a snowball effect. Tzfat is in the north, and it was easier for the great Sephardic Jews coming from places like, like different Sephardic countries to... Also, Tzfat had the Arizal, you know, and that was a tremendous, you know, a calling card, so to speak, where... And then the Beis Yosef settled in Tzfat. Now, once that happened, you know, that gave Tzfat a tremendous status. I mean, I'll give you an example, because I'm Sofer writes, I think, in one of his tshuvas, because I think during his lifetime, or maybe a little bit before his lifetime, there was a major earthquake that you know, caused the death of thousands upon thousands of Jews. And I think the Chassam Sofer writes, maybe he was basing himself on the writings of earlier giants, that it was because they insulted Yerushalayim, that they didn't settle, the Chacham didn't settle in Yerushalayim. The one who writes about this, I think, is Dr. David Berger. He sometimes shows up here because he has an apartment here in the neighborhood. So when he comes to Eretz Yisrael, he's here. So Bli Neder, next time we can invite him in to give a little bit of
about this whole
parasha. I mean, there's tons of work. If you go online, you know, if you Google, you'll get many, many articles on the issue of smicha in Sfat and why there was an objection to it and why it basically fell apart. It petered out. So I don't know if anyone here has the time to do that. I'll try to Bli Neder if I have, you know, the time. I don't have access to a computer right now, but we have the Google experts. You know. So let's just make a note of where we got up to. We're up to the Gemara's Kasha here about Rabbi Meir. You remember that on Daf Yudalet Amud Aleph we had the Braisa, which included in the list of the five Chacham that received Smicha from Yehuda ben Bava, we have Rabbi Meir. The Gemara is going to question this because Rabbi Meir actually got Smicha from Rabbi Akiva. So the Gemara is going to try to reconcile that. So
Rabbi Akiva only spent one night in Sfat.
Oh yeah, that's what they said?
Yeah, he said that it's so holy that the angels kept him up all night.
And how long was the Arizal in Sfat? He was there for a good couple of years. How old was he when he died? I mean, it's a whole machlokas in the stories. I heard one version that he was 36 years old when he died.
I think he was only there for a very short time, like a year or two.
Just about a year. It's amazing the impact of one individual. It's pretty scary. Okay, there are both. I wish everyone a great Shabbos.